I've lived in New Jersey my entire life, and I've been involved in lots of arts, acting, writing. I even married a musician. But a lot of people don't think New Jersey is known for arts and culture. Well, they're wrong. And my goal is to introduce everyone to the most talented people I know. They're singers, they're writers, they're musicians, they're actors, they're chefs, they're martial artists, they're everything you can imagine, and they're going to be on my show. Every one of them. Well, maybe not every one of them, but a lot of them. I'm Lucille Lasapio, and this is Not So Famous in New Jersey. In today's interview, I stray a little bit outside of my plan to interview people in the arts because Jess Alamo, my guest today, is both a comedian and a political activist. So we talk about everything from her respect for former Lieutenant Governor Republican Kim Guadagno to disenfranchisement of black business owners in Asbury Park to murder advice and the secret to being in politics. She may not be Lenny Bruce, but she made me laugh. Hello, Jess.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good. We've just been talking, we started talking about what was it that got you involved in political action?
I mean, I was involved since I was a young teenager. Like when I was like 14, I was marching in New York against the Iraq War. I had my whole patch on that said no blood for oil. I got kicked out of my classes. As I grew up, I kind of had the same politics, essentially. The whole thing started when that whole thing in Charlottesville with those like Nazis going through with those tiki torches and everything. And that girl got killed. It was terrible. Right after that, it sort of empowered some real nut jobs around town. And I lived in Asbury and I kept seeing these posters up, basically like white supremacy flyers all over town. You know, I was young and very angry and had a lot of energy. And I immediately made like a Facebook group event that was this stand up against hate rally. I learned very quickly. It was basically like a crash course in Asbury politics. Because I learned very quickly that someone on the west side, which is more like historically black, and the east side is more white, which is where I lived, they had already been planning something, and I kind of like hijacked it, basically. I had no idea what I was doing. I accidentally was disrespectful to people who were very affected as well by the Charlottesville rally. Like, obviously,
affected a little more personally. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I met up with this reverend on the west side named Nicole Harris, who is incredible. And it ended up being the first rally in Asbury Park history where the East and West Side basically came together. And
I was there.
Really?
Yeah,
I was
there.
Oh, that's so cool.
With my sister, my brother-in-law, yeah.
It was probably the most stressful thing I've ever done in my life, but it was incredible. It's probably the thing I'm most proud of, too.
Yeah.
Like I said, it was like a crash course in politics, learning how to deal with people and
divergent views.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I was all in at that point. I was like, okay, well, I'm going to run for this. I'm going to run for that. And
you know, I think when you're a kid, you think that everybody thinks the same way that you do.
Absolutely.
I always thought my father was like a raging racist until I actually met racists.
My mom's Jewish. My dad's Italian. I grew up with also like this hard-headed Sicilian father. As a teenager, I thought he was like the worst person in the whole world, some things he would say.
Yep.
And I'm not saying he was right. He had a lot to work on and he has worked on a lot, which is very cool. But when you get out of your house, and for me, I lived in Florida for a little while, which was the culture shock of the century. You become less surprised that someone like Donald Trump can win because you're constantly surrounded by people who hold those views. And in New Jersey, most of us just don't have access to that type of person. But you know, it's kind of a bubble.
I actually have a girlfriend. I'd say she's very naive. And up until a couple of years ago, she actually was insisting that racism was over.
Oh,
no, 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 there's no more racism. Like, of course, she doesn't say that anymore, but she's also been educated.
Isn't that also kind of our problem on the left, too? Some people, they don't mean to be a bad person. I mean, they're perpetuating things that aren't good. But I think the left, sometimes we go right for the jugular and we're like, well, this person is canceled.
Yeah.
Let's make sure she loses her job. And it's like, well, that's not how you do it.
Yeah.
You know?
And I blame the people that control the media. And I'm not condemning the media, but certain media. You know, if you only watch Fox News, you believe like, well, they couldn't say it if it wasn't true. So you believe what they're saying.
I've tried for years to get more millennials involved in voting. And the truth is, millennials dropped the ball. We just did. But Gen Z is really picking it up. And it's pretty cool.
Just this morning, my husband, Gary, was saying, well, the Democrats made the mistake of not talking about crime the right way. I'm like, wait a minute. They didn't make a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
They concentrated on abortion rights. And that got out the young voters.
Sure did. I don't think people should count out Joe Biden so quickly. I mean, no. He's not my favorite, but I think that there are a bunch of people who aren't yapping on Twitter and yapping on Facebook who silently support him.
He's not the best speaker. He's old. So am I. But he knows how to work with the other side. He knows how to get things passed. He got so much passed. It's like amazing
it
how
really
many
is.
Things have gotten passed.
I supported him since day one, and I got so much shit from people my age. People were nasty. They're like, what are you, a bootlicker? Like the most ridiculous things. Yeah. And it's like, no, I just know that he can beat Trump. And well, I was right.
And the funniest thing is, people that did that, oh, he's too old. Oh, but you supported Bernie Sanders.
Exactly.
Who couldn't even beat Hillary in the primary.
Don't even get me started.
I know. I hope this doesn't upset you. I'm going to out you right now to my audience and let them know that you're gay. Sorry?
No one knows that. Why would you say
I
that?
I know. Now, I have a cousin who's a lesbian, and I knew she was a lesbian before I knew what lesbianism was. Mm-hmm. So when did you realize that you were gay? And did you come out immediately?
No, I did not come out immediately. But, I mean, there are pictures of me as a kid. I would draw on a mustache, and I would slick my hair back. And since I was 5 years old, I wore a black leather jacket. I think my parents knew when I was very young because I literally wanted to be a boy. I mean, one time I stole scissors when my parents weren't looking. I chopped half my hair off. It was so sad. My hair was long and gorgeous. I had to get a bowl cut, like, above my ears. I still told myself I like guys, and I did. I had some nice connections with men. I said I was bisexual for most of my adult life. My first kiss with a woman, I think I was 18. I grew up saying I was bi, and when I was about 32 years old, I realized, I was like, you know what? I have no interest in dating men anymore. Like, I have some really good friends that are men, but it's honestly hilarious how much I didn't mesh with men. Like, I could be in a dude's bedroom, he would have his pants off, and I would have to text my best friend and be like, do you think he likes me? It was just, it was like a foreign language to me, and it still is kind of. And women, it's just so much easier, and, you know, obviously it's just what I like. So, I came out as a lesbian only 3 years ago.
So how much impact did that have on you becoming a comedian?
It was actually a pain in the ass because when I started doing comedy, I was bisexual. So like 75% of my jokes were about being bisexual. And all of a sudden I came out as a lesbian. I'm like, I can't do these jokes anymore. Well, I had to change like all my jokes. But truthfully, a lot of my act is about being gay because a lot of it is funny. For instance, I got fired from a job a few years ago. My job literally said, we don't want you to work here anymore, but can you stay on our softball team? Like, how am I not supposed to joke about being gay when this stuff happens to me?
My cousin, her mother used to say that she didn't want her spending too much time with me because I was too boy crazy. So I'm like, see, had you done it, maybe.
See, should have done it.
She blew it.
Should have done it. That's pretty funny. Yeah, people think that, like, if you do something different, then, you know, your kid won't come out gay. I have a childhood friend who I knew was gay since I was a kid. I remember overhearing her parents saying they wanted her to concentrate on tennis instead of softball because they thought softball would turn her into a lesbian. She ended up marrying a guy as an adult, divorced him, and now is with a woman. So it's like, I don't think it's tennis.
Now, I know you've heard this a million times, but how do you respond to people that say women aren't funny?
They can just go fuck themselves. Am I allowed to say that?
Fuck yeah.
It's so stupid. It doesn't even deserve a response, really. I feel bad for them that they've never been around a woman who is funny in their life. Mm-hmm. And I feel bad for any woman who was ever around this person. It's so out of touch and just so ridiculous. I think it's just easier for men not to have to think about those things.
Yeah.
They live in the world where that's the norm, where the comedians are mostly guys and that's normal. But for women, it's like when you see a female comedian, it's a little more exciting.
So you host a weekly comedy show in Asbury Park.
I did, for about 5 years at the Anchor's Bend.
So you're not doing that anymore?
So I moved it to Red Bank, and that's when we went to, like, a ticket form, and every show sold out. The venue in Red Bank, I loved it. It was great. They were awesome people.
And which venue was that?
It was called Scarlet Reserve.
Okay.
It was a smoking venue, so everyone could smoke weed in it. And so I don't mind that, but I was kind of scared of becoming, like, a pothead comic. Because I didn't want to have that for myself. And also, I have people in my life who are sober and couldn't come to the shows. I started looking for a new venue to do that. But it was awesome. I mean, it sold out every week. It was almost too fun.
I know you're pretty much as close to a native of Asbury Park as they come, since your grandmother grew up there and you grew up a couple of blocks away in Wanamassa. Mm-hmm. Now, when I was in high school, which was many years ago, We used to think it was so super cool to go drive down to Asbury Park and just walk on the boardwalk. Mm-hmm. And we used to make fun of really straight people that we called them elks, you know. So don't ask me why. I don't know why. Asbury Park is really different than what it was then. In fact, I had a friend that had a business, a long-standing business in Asbury Park, Mr. Fashion. He wasn't the original owner, but he had bought it from Carl, Mr. Fashion. I don't even know what Carl's last name is. And then Carl Fashion, that's it. He was told that he had to vacate the building for 2 months while they renovated it. You can't run a business if you're not there for 2 months. And then they were doubling his rent when he was going to come back in.
It's so terrible.
He was basically driven out of town. He had to move to a strip mall. And of course, the business died. It was obvious disenfranchisement of not just him, but a lot of other small business owners. Mm-hmm. What was your reaction to that?
I mean, it's really like indicative of what a small decision like 25 years ago can do for the future and for people now, because basically the council, I guess it was like about 25 years ago, they voted to sell the boardwalk to Madison Marquette. And truthfully, were they a little misguided? Yeah, but at the time, the town was broke. They had really no other option. So they sold the boardwalk to Madison Marquette, and that kind of made way for all these huge developers to come into town. Next, it was iStar. And these buildings and property, they were sold years and years and years ago. And for a long time, it was at a great medium. Like in like 2007, 2008, I worked at the Stone Pony, which was like the coolest thing you could do when you're 20. And that was right when Madison Marquette started taking over the Stone Pony and Live Nation came in. But there were still a few years where it was at this happy medium where things were a little safer, but you still had local musicians. And now it just crossed this line. But it's hard to say that it's bad. I mean, yeah, it's bad. It's not good. It sucks. It's sad. But at the same time, if they didn't do this 25 years ago, the town would be, you know, in shambles now, probably. Yeah. So it's hard. It's hard. It's really hard. Yeah. I don't know.
It's unfortunate because a boardwalk and a downtown area are easier to revive than, say, the West Side. If they had put some emphasis on the West Side and helping on the West Side, it would have helped the whole city.
For sure, but in typical fashion, they didn't care. That's why they're disenfranchised. Yeah, like, and it's a shame. I know that the council does care now. I mean, there are two amazing Black women on the council now. Now there's lesbian Amy Quinn. Good people.
Yeah.
And truthfully, like I've worked with them, and I'm friends with some of them, and like they genuinely care. But they were kind of given something they couldn't fix at that point. Dotted line was signed. They definitely still have made some mistakes, I think, with iStar. But it's hard when you're in that position to know what's going to happen in 30 years from now.
Yeah. Yeah. I know Sarah Silverman is one of your favorite comedians.
I love her because when I was 14, I watched Jesus's Magic. And it truthfully changed my life. Yeah. Like, I mean, I was like in awe. I was like, you can say this stuff? This is the craziest shit I've ever seen.
I have to tell you, my very favorite Sarah Silverman bit is, Jesus is coming in my face.
That's like...
to me, that is so hysterical.
It's so like stupid and so funny. And it has the ability to upset so many people, which kind of makes
it funnier. That's what makes it even funnier.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's so stupid. It's like, you know, imagine taking that so seriously that you actually get upset. I don't know.
And now, since I brought up Louis C.K. and I brought up Dave Chappelle, I'm going to bring up cancel culture. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to talk about whether or not it's real. Because what I think is that it's really more about accountability. We haven't really canceled out these entertainers. We've said they need to be accountable for what they've said and what they've done. From, you know, Bill Cosby to Louis C.K. to Dave Chappelle, who's made so many anti-trans jokes and comments.
Yeah.
Is disliking Bill Cosby and not wanting to watch his show anymore such a bad thing?
Of course not. Yeah. But I don't think that people like Dave Chappelle and Louis C.K. are the ones who are getting canceled. It's people who don't have that kind of fan support and money. Those are the ones that actually get canceled from cancel culture. And I don't believe in shutting down anyone. Even Louis C.K., I think he's disgusting. But I think that he missed a real opportunity to address it and maybe put that in his jokes, because it's the elephant in the room. Right. And until you address it and sincerely take accountability and apologize and show people that you know what you did was wrong. But he's not doing that. He's just going on stage and
pretending it didn't happen.
Well, and
you know, Dave Chappelle kind of did the same thing. I didn't watch the whole Saturday Night Live monologue because my husband's like, oh, so now you're canceling him? But But his whole thing was about anti-Semitism. Mm-hmm. And joking about how Kanye West and Irving were just like so stupid in the way they were handling the whole thing. But it's like, come on, Dave, how about the transgender issue? Like, I don't know. Maybe he did bring it up later on, but I'm kind of doubting he did.
Did you see his special with the transgender jokes?
I did see it.
Before I saw it, I was really mad at him because I was thinking, wow, he's saying all these things. That's crazy. And then I watched it and I thought that some of his jokes were downright shitty. Like, I didn't like them, but I don't want to shut him down for that. I think that his special was not as bad as people said it was. And look, I'm a cis person, so if it offends someone who's trans, obviously that's valid. But I think a lot of people who were very angry about it did not watch it. I think people who are angry about it, that's totally understandable. But I think that you should just turn it off then.
Yeah, and that's what it really is. It's like people aren't stopping him from performing.
No.
They're saying, I don't want to go and see him.
Yeah, and like I could think Dave Chappelle is an absolute genius, because I do. I think that he's brilliant.
Oh, I loved his show.
Yeah, and I could also really hate some of his jokes and really be offended by some of his jokes, because he said some jokes about LGBT people that really upset me.
Yeah, same thing with Bill Burr. He's really funny, but then he says a lot of really misogynistic jokes.
Exactly.
And it's like, that makes my skin crawl a little bit. Yeah.
But that's the thing. Nothing's in black and white. Everyone wants to be like an absolutist. And the truth is, like, you cannot like someone's joke and be upset by someone's joke and still laugh at their other jokes, because just because someone does something that may be a mistake or isn't good in your eyes, it doesn't discount them as a human being. I think it's dangerous. I really do. And as much as I get offended by some of Dave Chappelle's jokes, and I do, I'm not defending his bad jokes, I get offended by them. I still think he's brilliant, and I still think it's important to find out people who like those jokes, why do they like those jokes? And there's a more important conversation, and a comedian should not be the be-all and end-all of, you know, society.
Now, my friends Marielle Dodato and Vincent Solomino interviewed you a couple of years ago. In fact, right before COVID hit. And you talked about the similarities in the way women are treated in both comedy and politics. Now, anyone who listens to my podcast knows that I'm a raging feminist. And I'm always going on and on about misogyny and the fact of white male privilege. What can you add to the subject that I may not have already hit on? And if you don't know what I've hit on, don't admit it, because it means you haven't been listening to my podcast.
I've studied your podcast. No, I really have listened to your podcast, though. It's good. So I hope this one's good as well. I'm doing good.
Excellent.
But for instance, like just a personal story. When I first started doing comedy, I wasn't good. I started dating another comic who was a guy who was a good comic, and he was very liked in the scene. I was dating him, but my comedy was terrible, and I got booked on more shows than I've ever been booked on. It's just sad, because when I stopped dating men and stopped dating comedian men, which is, you know, a bigger milestone, those opportunities just disappeared. And I had to really fight for myself, which is why I book a lot of shows myself. It takes that power back, kind of, so I don't have to worry about the power dynamics when I'm controlling
it. You don't have to kiss somebody's ass.
Yeah, and I don't like booking shows. Honestly, like, it's a lot of work. And wrangling comedians is not easy. It was a necessity, especially after I came out as gay. And same with politics. When I came out as gay, things changed. The guys that were talking to me, who I thought were actually trying to help me, it turned out that they were just full of shit. And they all just disappeared. So I had to do things on my own. Like with Amy Quinn, we did the Asbury Park Women's Convention.
And what is the Women's Convention about?
So, right after Trump won.
You mean when he stole the election?
When he stole the election. When I was camping. I was laying in a tent at like 5 a.m. looking up at the sky. And I had this idea. I was like, I think Asbury should have like a big women's convention where women from all over come to Asbury, like this mecca, this feminist mecca. I talked to Amy Quinn and we got it going. The first year we did different panels, equal pay, healthcare, and we had a really cool panel about women who lost running for office and how it's important that they ran and it's important to keep running. Yeah. And that was probably the panel that everyone talks about still. But at the end of the day, we raised money to send women to Rutgers ready to run.
Oh, that's a great. I've been to that twice.
Yeah, I saw you there once.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. You were up on stage. Yeah, yeah. I was like,
give me a chance to be on stage. I'm there. You know, it's like.
You like ran up there. I was like, she knows what she's doing. It's totally nonpartisan. And although like I may vote Democrat because I'm a gay woman and I want to marry, you know, my fiance. We have Republican speakers, we have independent speakers. And the reason that we made that choice, and we got a lot of shit for it, because we had Kim Guadagno speak. I mean, people were threatening to boycott. It was insane. But you know what? She did what she had to do to be a woman running in as a Republican. And she kind of explained that on stage. And it was awesome to hear that the struggles that women have are on both sides.
So is everything about this, is it all political?
Yeah, at the end of the day, everything comes down to policy. There are social issues, but at the end of the day, policy really affects them.
I have a friend. She is a defense attorney in Chicago. She has defended a lot of women who have killed their husbands. But she may be someone,
if I'm going to kill my wife, I should go to Illinois so she can defend me?
Actually, there's no death penalty in Illinois anymore.
Okay.
But she has told me, if you kill somebody, do it alone, don't tell anybody, and call me before you do anything else.
Oh my gosh. My fiance, this is right up her alley. Like, yeah. I always jokingly say, like, if she wants to kill me, she'll get away with it.
Yeah.
Like, our whole library in our house is all these, like, true crime books.
My favorite thing, and I talk about this in almost every podcast, serial killers.
I have trouble watching fictionalized stuff. I know.
That's the same with books. Mm-hmm. I want to read about a real killer.
Me too, absolutely.
I don't want the fake ones. Mm-hmm. You know, and I want to know what I should be looking out for. Before you came here, you had texted me to say, you know, is this going to be audio or would there be video?
Yeah.
Because if it's video, I have to make sure I have my makeup on. That's something that men never worry about. I'm not even talking about makeup. They don't care what they look like.
No, I know. And it's funny because after I sent you that text, I had like a mental breakdown almost about that. I was like, it's almost like better for me to not wear makeup, to just go everywhere looking like shit, because as much as I don't think I'm attractive, there's always someone who's less attractive and that person will be empowered by me looking like shit.
Now, just about every comedian wants to have a special on Netflix. If you had one, what would it be called?
Oof.
And what would be the main topic that you would address?
Oh my gosh. I think that I would maybe call it Mein Kampf.
Oh God. You're going to the Nazi theme.
Yeah.
Huh?
And I'd probably address my journey in being a politician, like that lifetime that I had that was only a few years, but it's something that most people will never really know what it's like. And they think that you need something to get there. And the truth is, no, you just need to talk your way in.
and that's the sad thing. On the local level, it's really hard to get people to run. So a lot of times you get people that are, let's say, subpar. And then those people get elected, and then they go on to assembly, then they go on to state senate. And it's like people wonder why there's such bad people in Congress. Well, this is why. If you had just run,
exactly,
maybe there'd be good people.
People,
you know,
think there's some kind of secret to being involved in politics.
Yeah,
and the truth
it's just like
is,
being
like,
willing.
Just do it. It's not the Illuminati. I mean, I'm proof that literally anyone can get involved. You might have to deal with some bullshit because, you know, the people have the money. You know, you can't piss them off too much. Yeah.
This is my last question. I saw one of those comedy special fundraisers where there was like a dozen or more comedians. Robin Williams was absolutely brilliant. All the comedians stayed on stage. So the next comedian up was Richard Lewis. Robin couldn't help but to continuously interrupt him. And Lewis could not handle it. So this was all a setup for my question. Which comedian would you love to perform with? And who would you be scared to death to be on the stage with?
There are so many people that I'd be scared to death to perform with. I would do, I mean, atrocious if I was on stage with someone like Chappelle. Our audiences are probably completely different. Mm-hmm. It's hard to follow a genius. Same with Jerry Seinfeld. And a lot of times with those big comedians, it's really hard to open for them because everyone's just like, get this guy off the stage, we're ready for the next thing.
Yeah.
I think I would like to perform with Amy Schumer. She gets a lot of heat, and that's kind of why I love her, because I think that it just kind of reflects this internal misogyny that people have. They don't know why they hate her, but they hate her.
Mm-hmm, and like people that hated Hillary Clinton.
Exactly. And they hate her, and they don't know why. I always hear that, and it's because she's not the typical beautiful model type, and they don't like that she's unapologetic.
Yeah.
And as someone who has been through similar, just on a local level, I really relate to her.
Mm-hmm.
People really don't realize, like, they think, like, oh, she's not talented. It's like,
oh, she's really good.
She's been on the road and doing stand-up since before half these people were born.
Thank you so much for being here, Jess.
Thank you so much.
This is a great way to spend an early afternoon on a Sunday.
This was amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Your questions were fantastic. You're fantastic. And the coffee's fantastic. So,
thank you. I love the arts, and I love to talk. And that's why I'm talking to local artists. And if you like listening, then subscribe to my podcast. You can do it on this page, on iTunes, or anywhere you get podcasts. I'm Lucille Sapio, and this is Not So Famous in New Jersey.